darkness, and finally at the end, an intellect as cold and empty as any evil. She was curious about me the way some scientists are curious about a new species of insect. Find it, capture it, put it in a jar, whether it wants to go with you or not. It's just an insect, after all. They could call her mother gentle if they wanted to, but Mommy Dearest was a hell of a lot more accurate. Chapter 30. Caleb had climbed in the back of the Jeep to get the plastic I'd started carrying for when I transported something messier than chickens and spread it on the seat so that Nathaniel could drive. I tried to insist on driving, but Jason had growled at me. He had a point. I wasn't feeling my steadiest. Nathaniel, his eyes bled back to their normal lilac, had told me, "You passed out. You stopped breathing. Jason shook you, and you did this sort of gasp." Nathaniel shook his head, face very serious. "We had to keep shaking you, Anita. You kept not breathing." If they'd had been human, I might have argued with them that they only thought I'd stopped breathing, but they weren't human. If a bunch of shapeshifters were unable to hear or see me breathe, I had to believe them. Had Mommy Dearest tried to kill me? Or had it been accidental? Or incidental? She wouldn't have meant to kill me, but she might have done it by accident, and I touched enough of her thinking to know it wouldn't bother her. She wouldn't be sorry. She would feel no guilt. She didn't think like a person. Or rather, she didn't think like a nice, normal, civilized human. She thought like a sociopath. No empathy. No sympathy. No guilt. No compassion. In a strange way, that must be a very peaceful existence. Did you need more emotions than she possessed to be lonely? I'd think so, but I really didn't know. Lonely was not a word I would have applied to her. If you didn't understand the need for friendship or love, could you be lonely? I shrugged and shook my head. What is it? Nathaniel asked. If you don't feel love or friendship, can you be lonely? He raised his eyebrows at me. I don't know. Why do you ask? We've all just brushed up against the mother of all vampires, and she's more like the mother of all sociopaths. Human beings are rarely pure sociopaths. It's more like they're missing a piece here and there. True, pure sociopathy is really pretty rare, but Mommy Dearest qualifies, I think. It doesn't matter if she's lonely, Caleb said. I glanced back at him. His brown eyes were very large, and underneath his fading tan, he was pale. I sniffed the air before I could think, and the car was a playground of scents. The sweet musk of Wolf, the clean vanilla of Nathaniel and Caleb. Caleb smelled young. I wasn't sure how to explain it, but it was as if I could smell how tender his meat would be, how fresh his blood. He smelled clean. The scent of some lightly perfumed soap coated his skin. But underneath was another scent, bitter and sweet all the same time. The way blood is salty and sweet at the same time. I turned as far as the seatbelt would allow and said, "You smell good, Caleb, all tender and scared." He was the true predator, not me. But the look he flashed me was all prey. Huge eyes, face soft, lips open just a breath. I watched his pulse beat against the skin of his neck. I had an urge to crawl into the back seat and run my tongue over that frantic pulse, set teeth into that tender flesh, and set that pulse point free. I had this image of Caleb's pulse like a piece of hard candy that would come free all in one piece and would be sucked and rolled around in my mouth. I knew it wasn't like that. I knew that if I bit down, the pulse would be destroyed, that it would die in a spill of red blood. But the candy imagery stayed with me. And even the thought of blood spraying in my mouth didn't seem terrible. I closed my eyes so I couldn't see Caleb's neck beating and concentrated on my own breathing. But with every breath, I drew in more of that bitter sweetness, the taste of fear. I could almost taste his flesh in my mouth. What's wrong with me? I asked that out loud. I want to tear Caleb's pulse out of his throat. It's too early for Jean-Claude to be awake. Besides, I don't usually want blood. Or not only blood. It's close to the full moon, Nathaniel said. It's one of the reasons Jason lost enough control to change all over your seats. I opened my eyes, turned my face to look at him, and away from Caleb's fear. Belle tried to get me to feed off Caleb, but she couldn't. So why suddenly does he smell tasty? Nathaniel had finally found another exit back onto 44, He eased in behind a yellow car that needed a major paint job, or maybe it was in the middle of getting one, because half of it was covered in gray primer. I caught movement in the rearview mirror. It was the blue Jeep. It was at the end of the narrow street with cars on either side. It had just cleared the corner and seen us. And now it was hanging back, hoping, I think, that we hadn't seen it. Shit, I said. What? Nathaniel asked. The damn Jeep is at the end of the street. Nobody look back. Everyone stopped themselves in mid-motion except for Jason. He hadn't even tried to look back. Maybe Wolfnecks didn't work that way, or maybe he was staring at other things. I realized he was looking at Caleb. I looked at that huge shaggy head. Are you thinking about eating Caleb? He turned and gave me the full force of that pale green gaze. People say that dogs are descended from wolves, but there are moments when I doubt that. There was nothing friendly or sympathetic or even remotely tame in those eyes. He was thinking about food. He met my gaze because he knew I'd caught him thinking about eating someone that was under my protection. Then he turned back to gaze at Caleb and think of meat. Dogs never look at people and think, food. Hell, they don't even look at other dogs and think that. Wolves do. The fact that there is no recorded account of a North American wolf attacking a human being for food has always amazed me. You can look into their eyes, and you know that there is no one home that you can talk to. I knew that lycanthropes want fresh meat when they first change shape. New lycanthropes are deadly, but Jason wasn't new anymore, and he could control himself. I knew that. But I still didn't like the way he was looking at Caleb, and I liked even less that he was projecting his need onto me. "What do you want me to do about the Jeep?" Nathaniel asked. I jerked my attention back to Nathaniel and away from the hunger. It was an effort to think past it, but if the Jeep was full of bad guys, then I needed to be concentrating on them, not some metaphysical craving. Hell, I don't know. I don't get followed that much. Usually people just try and kill me. I have to either pull out onto the highway or turn the other way. Just sitting here, they're going to know that we saw them. He had a point. A good one. Highway. He moved us forward, angling for the ramp. Once we're on it, where are we going? The circus, I think. Do we want to lead the bad guys there? Nathaniel asked. Jason said it earlier. Most people know where the master of the city bunks during the day. Besides, the weir rats are still there, and most of them are ex-mercenaries or something in that ballpark. I think I'm going to call ahead and ask Bobby Lee's opinion. Opinion about what? Caleb asked from the back seat. His eyes were still too wide, and he still smelled of fear, but he wasn't looking at the wolf on the seat beside him. Whatever he was afraid of wasn't something that close. About whether we catch them or turn around and try to follow them. Catch them, Caleb said. Catch them how? Not sure, but I know that I know a lot more about catching bad guys than about following people to see where they lead me. I'm not a detective, Caleb, not really. I can spot a clue if it bites me on the ass and give an opinion about a monster-related crime, but at heart, I'm in a more direct line of work than a detective. He looked puzzled. I'm an executioner, Caleb. I kill things. Sometimes you have to track things in order to kill them, Nathaniel said. I looked at him, that serious profile, his eyes searching the traffic, his hands on the wheel at exactly 2 and 10. He hadn't had his license a year yet. If I hadn't insisted, I'm not sure he had ever had one. True, but I don't want to kill them. I want to question them. I want to know why they're following us. I don't think they are, Nathaniel said. What? I asked. The blue Jeep didn't follow us onto the highway. Knew we spotted them, maybe. Or, like everyone else, knows where the master sleeps, so it's not hard to find his girlfriend. Nathaniel said it, voice quiet, eyes on the road. But he knew I hated being the master's girlfriend. Or at least being called that. Truthfully, he had a point. If you knew who someone was dating and where they lived, eventually you could locate them again. I hated being predictable. Jason's great, shaggy head came around my seat and rubbed against my shoulder, the rough of his face tickling along my cheek. I reached up and petted that great head without thinking, the way I would have done if he'd been a dog. The moment I touched him, the hunger thrilled through me from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet. The hair on my body stood to attention, and it felt like something was trying to crawl up the back of my skull because the nape of my neck was prickling so badly. The wolf and I turned as one to stare at Caleb. If my eyes could have bled to wolf, they'd have done it then. Caleb looked terrified. I think if he'd just stayed still, we'd have been okay. But he didn't. He unfolded his arms from his nearly bare chest and eased across the seat. Jason growled, and I was out of my seat on the floorboards in the back before I had a chance to think, unseat-belted in a speeding car. Bad idea. I think that would have put me back in my own headspace, but Caleb ran. He spilled over the back seat, and Jason and I spilled after him. It was like being water, following the natural course. We didn't pin Caleb so much as kneel and sit around him. Caleb was pressed tight in the corner of the cargo area, his hands tight against his chest. He tried to take up as little space as possible. I think Caleb knew that touching either of us would be bad. Jason sat on his haunches, flashing fangs, and letting the trickle of growl slide out. You didn't need words to know what it meant. Don't move. Don't fucking move. Caleb didn't move. I was on my knees in front of Caleb, and all I could see was the pulse in his neck, thudding, thudding against the skin, trying to break free. I wanted to help it. I could suddenly smell forest, trees, and the scent of wolf fur that wasn't Jason. Richard breathed down my mind like a sweet-scented cloud. I saw him in my bathtub all those miles away. An arm darker than the tan Richard carried most of the year was across his chest, propping him up in the water, holding him. Jamil being a good Haiti, making sure his Ulfric didn't drown. It was what Jason had done for me earlier, minus the sex. Richard was a little homophobic. He didn't like men who reminded him they liked men, especially if that man was himself. I couldn't throw stones on that one. I was pretty much the same way around women. No matter how sophisticated I was supposed to be, I kept forgetting that another woman could find me attractive. Always caught me by surprise. Jamil's face hovered on the edge of Richard's, but it was as if, in this dream vision, all that was truly clear was Richard. I caught glimpses of his body through the water and the faint candlelight. Lycanthropes sometimes had light sensitivity problems, so there were no bright overheads, but the candles made the water dark and hid more of Richard from view than I wanted. I felt like a metaphysical peeping Tom, but the hunger was so easily turned to a different kind of hunger. It always had been. Richard looked up at me, and the side of his face, shorn of hair, caught at my throat. I wanted to ask, why? But he spoke first. It was the first time we'd spoken mind to mind like this, and it startled me. I'd known Jean-Claude and I could do it, but not Richard and me. The hunger's mine, Anita. I'm sorry. Something that creature did to me stripped me of most of my control. For a second I thought he meant the mother of all darkness. Then I realized he meant Belle. I gazed down at Caleb's frightened eyes, and my eyes were drawn again to his neck, and then down the line of his chest to his stomach. He was breathing hard enough, scared enough that there was a pulse low in his belly, vibrating through that line of hair that led down into his pants. The stomach was soft and tender, lots of flesh there. Anita! Anita, hear me! I had to blink the image of Caleb's quivering flesh away, and I was suddenly seeing Richard's image more clearly than what actually lay in front of me. What? I knew that one word wasn't said out loud, only in my head. You can turn the hunger to sex, Anita. I shook my head. I think I'd rather eat Caleb than fuck him. You've never eaten anyone, or you wouldn't say that, Richard said. I couldn't really argue with that. Are you seriously saying that you'd be okay with me fucking Caleb? He hesitated, the water flickering in the flame light as his body moved restlessly. I caught a glimpse of knee and thigh. If it's a choice between eating him or screwing him, yes. You didn't even like sharing me with Jean-Claude. We're not dating, Anita. Ouch. Sorry, forgot that for a moment, I said. The momentary flare of pain like a half-healed wound helped me think a little more clearly. Jason is in wolf form, Richard. I don't do furry. That I can do something about. I saw his beast like some golden shadow leap out of him and into me. It was like being on the receiving end of a metaphysical knife, until the power stabbed through me and into Jason, and I was suddenly in the middle of all that power, all that pain, all that rage. The beast feeds on pain and rage, sort of the ultimate id. I was left kneeling, gasping, too breathless to scream. Jason screamed for me, and I felt his beast slide away from him. No, into him, like stuffing something impossibly huge into a suitcase that was already full. But this suitcase was Jason's body, and it hurt. I felt the bones twist, the muscles pop and reattach. Fuck, it hurt. I caught a distant thought from Richard that it was hurting so much because it was forced. When you fight the change, it hurts more. It was as if the fur was absorbed back into the pale flesh that rose through it, like something caught in ice melting back to the surface. Jason's body melted back, and the fur sank into him. The larger bones, the muscles, it just all sank into him until he lay pale and shivering on a bed of clear liquid. The fluid had soaked my jeans from the knees down. Jason had changed, but not fed. Now he'd been forced to change again less than half an hour later. Maybe if he'd been allowed to feed, he'd have been all right. But now he lay shivering, curling into a ball to hold himself and keep in what warmth he had left, and to take up as little space as possible. I think Jason, like Caleb, knew touching me would be bad. Jason wasn't a danger to Caleb anymore. Until he rested, he wasn't a danger to anyone. In fact, I stared down at the curve of his butt, so smooth, so firm, so tender. I gazed on him nude and didn't think about sex at all. All Richard had done was give me a choice of meals. I looked at Richard, down that vision that held him crystalline and everything else hazy. All I can think about is sinking teeth into his flesh. You've made him helpless, and I still need to feed, because you still need to feed.
I'll find something here to eat. I will feed. But you don't have anything safe to hunt, Anita. You don't want to hurt either of them.
I screamed, loud and long, letting the frustration fill the jeep, pour out of my mouth, scald at my throat, ball my hands into fists, and lash out, smashing the side of the jeep. I heard the metal groan, and that made me blink, look at what I'd done. I dented the metal, a round dimple the size of my fist. Fuck! Caleb made a small sound, and I looked down at him, and all I could see was the soft flesh of his stomach. I could almost feel it under my teeth. I was crouched over Caleb, my face sniffing along his stomach. I didn't remember getting this close. Richard called to me.
Anita!
I looked up, as if he were really in front of me. He pushed Shamil's arm away and leaned back against the side of the tub. He ran his hands over his chest, fingers tracing his nipples, one hand trailing lower as he pushed himself out of the water. It cascaded down his body in silver flame shot lines, and that hand traced lower, lower, over his stomach, down the line of hair, and finally to cup himself, play with himself. I watched him grow larger, and the hunger changed like turning a switch. But the moment my hunger became sex, the ardor flared to life. It came from the center of my being like a flame, spreading, spreading, and Richard's hand, Richard's body, fanned the heat, brought it in a roaring sheet over my skin. But Jean-Claude wasn't there to help us this time, and Richard couldn't shield today. The ardor ran down the metaphysical cord and hit Richard like a truck at full speed. It bowed his back, convulsed his hand where it gripped his body, made him fall back on the edge of the tub, his legs trailing into the water. I looked into those big brown eyes, the face so empty without its mane of hair, and watched terror fight with desire. I didn't think he'd ever felt the full force of the ardor before. It overwhelmed him, left him breathless, immobile. But that wouldn't last. I knew it wouldn't last. I told him what he'd told me. You can turn the ardor to hunger, but we're going to have to feed on something, or someone, Richard. It's too late for anything else. Even his voice in my head seemed strangled.
I feel better. And worse. I think I can hunt now. I couldn't have moved that much before.
Everything has its upside, Richard, and its down. I was angry with Richard, a fine hot rage that helped keep me treading the water of the ardor that was trying so hard to engulf me, drown me in desire. But I held my anger to my chest and treaded water for all I was worth. I felt his hunger change, felt his belly tighten with the need for flesh, and blood, and tearing. And only distant, very distant, was the thrill of sex.
I'll hunt an animal, and I'll be fine, I think.
That won't help me much, Richard, and I let the anger trail down the binding between us.
I am sorry, Anita. I didn't understand.
I knew in that moment that I could force his hunger back into the ardor, that just as he forced Jason to change form, I could force Richard's hunger to be the form of my choosing. I knew I could run magic down his skin and force him to feed the way I was going to have to feed. But I didn't. He'd done what he'd done in innocence. I couldn't return the favor, not deliberately. Go hunt your animal, Richard.
Anita, I am sorry.
You're always sorry, Richard. Now get out of my head before I do something we'll both regret. He pulled away, but it wasn't a clean break. Normally his shields were solid like metal doors clanging down. Today it was like taffy pulling apart, clinging to each other, huge tendrils of sticky, melting candy that even when pulled apart was still two halves of a whole. I wanted to pull us together, to melt into the heat until we were one hot, sticky mess, and today Richard couldn't stop me. He didn't have the control to keep me out of him. Jean-Claude woke. I felt his eyes flash wide, felt him take that first gasping breath, felt life fill him. He was awake. Jason was gazing at me with his sky-blue eyes.
He's awake.
I nodded. I know. Nathaniel spoke as if he'd understood way more of the unheard conversation than he should have.
We're almost to the circus, Anita.
How long?
5 minutes? Less?
Make it less, I said. The jeep leapt forward, accelerating. I crawled into the back seat and fastened the seatbelt tight across me. It wasn't to keep me safe in case we had an accident. It was to remind me not to let myself loose until I got to the circus and Jean-Claude. Chapter 31. I fought the ardor on the drive to the circus. I fought the ardor when I ran up the parking lot and banged on the door. I ran past Bobby Lee's surprised face and managed to say, "Ask Nathaniel about the jeep." Then I was past him and running for the stairs that led down, down to the underground. Richard was running too. He was running through the trees, limbs and leaves slashing at him. But he was never quite there, dodging, moving like water made flesh, flesh made speed. He ran through the trees, and I heard something large crashing ahead of him. His head came up, and the chase was on. I hit Jean-Claude's bedroom door as Richard was catching glimpses of the deer that darted just ahead of him, sprinting for its life. There were other wolves in the forest, most of them in true wolf form, but not all. I flung the door open, and the guards on the door, closed it firmly behind me. I don't know what they sensed or what they saw, and that was probably just as well. There were still blue silk sheets on the bed, and Asher was still framed in them, motionless, dead. Only the master of the city was awake, only he moved. I sent a questioning thought and felt all the vampires asnooze in their coffins, tucked in their beds. I touched Angelito for a moment and found him restless and pacing, confused, wondering why his mistress hadn't succeeded in her diabolical plan. He looked up as if he saw me or felt something. Then I was back at the bathroom door. Richard had his deer down and struggling. A hoof caught him across the stomach, tore the skin. But there were other wolves there now, and the doe had no chance. A black furred wolf tore into her throat, and I felt Richard riding the deer in human form, holding her as the struggles grew slower, spasmodic, involuntary. The deer's fear faded, like champagne opened and left to go flat. The bathroom door flung open, hitting the wall, and I didn't remember touching it. I was through the door before it slammed shut behind me, and again, I didn't remember touching it. Jean-Claude was in the black marble tub. He was kneeling, his long black hair clinging to his shoulders. He'd cleaned up. Feeling me coming towards him like a storm of need, he'd run a bath. Of course, he'd felt me like a storm of desire before. It didn't always mean the storm would fall on him. I could smell the fresh, hot blood as Richard leaned down towards the deer's throat. The wolf that had actually made the kill had backed off so the Ulfric could feed. The deer's skin smelled acrid, almost bitter, as if the fear had bled out of the skin. I did not want to be in Richard's head when he put his mouth to that flesh. I climbed into the bathtub in my clothes, the hot water soaking my jeans almost to the tops of my thighs. "Help me." It came out in a whisper that I'd meant to be a scream. Jean-Claude stood up, water streaming down the perfect whiteness of his skin, drawing my eyes down the length of his body. Finding him soft and not ready for me, I screamed, and Richard sank teeth into skin that was covered in hair. Jean-Claude caught me, or I would have fallen into the water. I suddenly couldn't feel Richard anymore. It was as if a door had slammed in my face, and there was a second, a blessed silence, a quietness that went all the way to my soul. Jean-Claude spoke into that silence.
I can shield you from our Richard, ma petite, and he from you, but I cannot shield us both from the ardeur.
I stared up at him, where I'd half swooned into his arms, his hands at my back, my body bowed down towards the water, my legs soaked with the hot liquid. I opened my mouth to say something. Then he was as good as his word, and the ardeur came roaring back. I convulsed in his arms, and he nearly dropped me, trailing my hair in the water, pulling me upwards, pressing our bodies against one another. My hands, my mouth, my body swarmed over him, traced that slick, perfect skin, caressed the faint tracery of whip scars on his back, which were just another part of his perfection. He drew back from my mouth enough to gasp,
Ma petite, I have not fed. There is no blood to fill my body.
I gazed up at him and found his eyes as normal as they ever got, midnight blue, lashed with black lace. But there was no power in them. Usually by the time we'd gotten this much foreplay in, his eyes had bled to pure, pupilless blue. I had to swim up through the ardeur, through the need to finally understand what he meant. I pushed my hair back to one side and said,
Feed. Feed. Then fuck me. I cannot roll your mind, ma petite. It will only be pain.
I shook my head, eyes closed, my hands tracing over the skin of his shoulders and arms. Please, Jean-Claude, please, feed. Feed on me.
If you were in your right mind, you would not offer this.
I pulled the red T-shirt out of my pants, but had trouble pushing the straps of my shoulder holster down, as if I couldn't remember how. I screamed my frustration, wordless. Maybe because of that, or maybe because Jean-Claude was trying to fight off too many things at once, I suddenly felt Richard feeding, hot flesh going in great gulps down his throat. I choked, stumbled, collapsed against the edge of the tub, letting the hot water come up to my waist. I was going to be sick. Jean-Claude touched my back, and I couldn't sense Richard anymore.
I cannot shield us from our wolf. Fight both your ardeur and mine, and fight my own bloodlust. It is too much.
I sat on the edge of the tub, hands flat, trying to keep myself steady on the marble.
Then don't fight at all. Pick your battles. What battle should I choose?
He asked, voice soft. The ardeur rose like a gentle wave, chasing back the nausea, cleansing me of the sensation of meat and flesh going down my throat. I hadn't realized the ardeur had any gentleness to it. As if he'd read my thoughts, Jean-Claude said,
If you do not struggle against the ardeur, it is not so terrible.
Like the beast, if you accept it, it doesn't beat the hell out of you? He gave a small smile.
Oui, ma petite.
The ardeur drew me to my feet, and I wasn't shaking anymore. I was steady in my desire. I moved through the hot, thigh-deep water, my jeans clinging to me like a second skin, my jogging shoes sliding through the thickness of the water. I stood touching him only with my gaze, the strength of his thighs, the loose swelling of his groin, skin there slightly darker in color than the rest of him, the line of black hair that traced upward, around his belly button, to the lines of his chest with pale circles of his nipples, and the flat whiteness of the cross-shaped burn scar. I came to the grace of his shoulders, the line of his neck, and finally, the face. I was never sure how to look upon his face and not be overwhelmed. If it had been just the dark glory of his hair, I could have borne it. But his eyes, the darkest blue they could be, and not be black. They were the richest blue I'd ever seen. His eyelashes were so thick they were like black lace. The bones in his face were delicate, small, and finely chiseled, as if whoever had made him had paid attention to every curve of his cheek, every turn of his chin, every sweep of brow, and finally the mouth. His mouth was simply beautiful, so red against the whiteness of his skin. I touched his face, traced the edge of it from the temple to chin, and my fingers clung to the beads of water on his skin, sticking, so that touching him wasn't smooth or easy. The ardeur was still inside me like a great warm weight, but I'd welcomed it this time. Welcomed it chasing back Richard's beast, and I could think, though only about the man in front of me. I stared up into that face and said what I was thinking. Was this the face that launched a thousand ships? I slipped my hand behind his back and began gently to bring him closer, as if for a kiss, and burnt the topless towers of Ilium. I turned my face and swept my hair aside, exposing my neck.
"Sweet Helen, make me immortal with a kiss."
He spoke.
"Why, this is hell, nor am I out of it. Thinkest thou that I, who saw the face of God and tasted the eternal joys of heaven, am not tormented with 10,000 hells and being deprived of everlasting bliss?"
The quote made me turn and look at him. "That's from Dr. Faustus, too, isn't it?"
"Oui."
"I only know the one quote," I said.
"Let me give you another. I kissed thee ere I killed thee. No way but this, killing myself to die upon a kiss."
"That's not Marlowe," I said.
"One of his contemporaries," Jean-Claude said.
"Shakespeare," I said.
"You surprise me, ma petite."
"You gave me too big a clue," I said. "Marlowe and Shakespeare are about the only contemporaries that people still quote." I frowned up at him. "Why are you fighting me on this?"
"Today, with the ardor riding you, you say feed. When your mind has cleared, you will call foul, and I will be punished by your regret."
A look of such longing and frustration crossed his face.
"I want more than almost anything to share blood with you, ma petite. But if I take it now when you are intoxicated, you will refuse me later, more adamantly than ever."
I would have liked to argue with him. I would have liked to find another quote from someone to help me persuade him. But my control of the ardor wasn't as good as his, yet. Just staring up at all that beauty was making me forget. Forget what little poetry I knew. Forget logic, reason, restraint. Forget everything but his beauty. Forget everything but my own need. I didn't so much kneel as fall down his body. The hot water soaked through my skirt, my bra, my body, holding me in the heat of it, as I gazed up at the length of Jean-Claude. He looked down at me, and his eyes still were human, normal, lovely to look at. But I wanted more. I leaned my face in towards him slowly for a kiss on the mouth.
"Ma petite, there is nothing you can do until I have fed."
I laid a gentle kiss on his groin. He closed his eyes and his breath came out in a careful sigh.
"I am not saying it is not pleasurable, but I will be of no use to you."
I took him in my mouth, and he was still small and soft, so I didn't have to fight to get all of him inside. I loved the sensation of him when he was small, not just because I wasn't fighting the erection to breathe and swallow, but the difference in texture. There was nothing on a woman's body that had this feel to it. I rolled him gently around in my mouth, and he shuddered. I sucked gently, pulling with my lips, rolling my eyes upward to watch him throw back his head, his hands convulse, grabbing at empty air. I pulled back enough to whisper, so that my breath caressed the wet skin of his groin.
"Feed, so we can both feed."
He shook his head and looked down at me, and there was a look I hadn't seen much on his face. Stubbornness.
"Pleasure, I will take from you, ma petite, but not blood. Not while the ardor rides you. If you still wish to be embraced after the ardor is fed, then I will gladly, joyfully comply, but not like this."
I slid my hands up the smooth wetness of his hips.
"I need to feed now, Jean-Claude. Please, please."
"No." And he shook his head at me again. The ardor had been ready to be gentle as I'd ever felt it, but being denied didn't make it or make me feel gentle. Angry, stubborn, cheated. I tried to think past it and couldn't. I'd been good, so good, for so long. I hadn't fed on Caleb, and no one would have screamed at me for it. I hadn't fed on Nathaniel, and he was my pomme de sang. I wanted him to go another day before he got munched on. I didn't like that he'd passed out at the club. I hadn't bothered Jason, who had been too weak to argue. Once I felt Jean-Claude wake, I knew what I wanted. I hadn't even seen the other men I passed to get to his room. They hadn't even existed for me. Now he was denying me, refusing me, rejecting me. Some small distant part of me knew that that wasn't true. It wasn't even fair. But that was a distant voice. The voices in the front of my head were screaming, "Fuck him! Feed on him! Take him!" I'd fought until there wasn't enough of me left to fight. There was nothing but the need, and the need had no mercy. I covered him with my mouth again, and I did something that I could do only when he was at his smallest. I drew his balls gently into my mouth, so that I held all of them inside my mouth. It was the most amazing sensation to be able to hold him, to flick my tongue on the loose skin between his testes, to roll the delicate eggs of his body against my teeth and cheeks. He filled my mouth this way, so wide, impossibly wide. But because there was no length to match it, I wasn't choking or fighting to breathe. It was as if I could have held him inside me like this for days. I sucked on him, the shaft, the balls, all at once fitting my mouth around the base of him, so that my lips formed a seal against his body, and I sucked him, licked him, rolled him, explored him. I looked up and found his eyes had bled to blue at last. But I didn't care anymore. I closed my eyes, wrapped my hands around the smooth tightness of his buttocks, and gave myself over to the joy of it. I heard his cries, felt his body shudder and quiver under my touch, but it was distant. His flesh filled my mouth, rolled so easily under my tongue. I'd always enjoyed the sensation of him when he was loose, but I'd never been able to indulge myself, because after a few touches, like all men, he didn't stay small. I wrapped my mouth close and closer to the base of him and grazed my teeth ever so lightly there. There, the base of all of him, so that to bite too hard would take it all. I knew what an act of trust this was for him. I bit just hard enough to make him cry out, then pulled gently against his body, using mostly lips for pressure. I let his balls slip out and sucked the rest of him back in my mouth hard and fast, pulling harder than I should have, sucking him as hard and as fast as I wanted. No control now, no waiting, just the feel of him rolling in and out of my mouth as I pulled on him. He screamed my name, half pleasure, half pain, and the ardor burst over both of us. The heat spread upward through me, and I felt it spread, thrust itself into Jean-Claude. So hot, so hot, so very hot, as if the water around us should boil. I had enough left of me somewhere, and all of that, to let go of him with my mouth, so that I didn't get too carried away. I convulsed against his legs, my nails digging into his butt, hips, thighs, as he rocked above me, and fought to keep his feet. He finally half sat, half collapsed to the edge of the tub, and sat there, propped up on his arms, breathing too hard, and that he was breathing at all meant that he'd fed his ardor, as I'd fed off of him. Sometimes it was just an exchange of energy. Sometimes it was a true feeding. I climbed out of the tub enough to sit beside him, but didn't touch him. Sometimes, right away after the ardor had been fed, touching of any kind could reignite it, especially between people who both had held the ardor. So it had been between Jean-Claude and Belle. So it was sometimes between us. His eyes were still solid blue, like midnight skies when the stars have drowned. His voice was breathy when he said, "You are getting better at feeding the ardeur without true orgasm, ma petite." I have a good teacher. He smiled the smile a man gives a woman when they've just finished such things, and it isn't the first time they've done them, and it won't be the last. An apt pupil, as they say. I looked at him, and he was pale alabaster with that black, black hair, those blue eyes. The folds and hollows of his body, exposed to the overhead lights, were as beautiful and familiar to me as a favorite path that I could walk forever and never tire of. I stared at Jean-Claude, and it wasn't the beauty of him that made me love him. It was just him. It was a love made up of a thousand touches, a million conversations, a trillion shared looks, a love made up of danger shared, enemies conquered, a determination to keep the people that depended on us safe at almost any cost, and a certain knowledge that neither of us would change the other, even if we could. I love Jean-Claude, all of him, because if I took away the Machiavellian plottings, the labyrinth of his mind, it would lessen him, make him someone else. I sat on the edge of the tub with my jeans and jogging shoes soaking in the water, looking at him laugh, watching his eyes bleed back to human, and I wanted him. Not for sex, though that was in there, but for everything. "You look serious, ma petite. What are you thinking about so solemn-faced?" "You," I said, voice soft. "Why should that make you look so solemn?" The humor began to leak away from his face, and I knew without being 100% sure that he was thinking I was about to run away again. He'd probably been worried about that from the moment I shared a bed with him and Asher. I usually ran after I'd made some big breakthrough. Or would that be breakdown? A surprisingly wise friend told me that I hold back some part of myself from all the men in my life. He said that I do it to keep myself safe, to keep myself from being consumed by love. Jean-Claude's face had gone very careful, as if he were afraid for me to read his expression. I wanted to argue, but I couldn't. He was right. Jean-Claude looked at me, face still empty, but there was a tightness around his eyes, a wariness that he couldn't quite hide. He was waiting for the blow to fall. I'd taught him to expect it. I took a deep breath, let it out slowly, and finished. What I hold back from you is sharing blood. We fed the ardor off each other now, but I still won't let you take blood. Jean-Claude opened his mouth as if to say something, then closed it. He'd sat up straighter, hands clasped in his lap. It wasn't just his face he was fighting to keep neutral. Even his body language was so very careful. I asked you to feed off me a few minutes ago, and you said not while the ardor was riding me, not while I was intoxicated. I had to smile at the choice of words, because intoxicated was a good description of the ardor, metaphysical liquor. I've fed the ardor, we both have. I'm not intoxicated anymore. He'd gone very still, that other stillness that old vampires could do. It was like if I looked away, he wouldn't be there when I looked back. We have both fed the ardor, this much is true. Then I'm still offering blood. He took a deep breath. I want this, ma petite, you know that.
I know.
But why now? I told you, I had a talk with a friend. I cannot give you what Asher gave you, gave us yesterday. With my marks upon you, I may not be able to roll your mind at all. It will only be pain.
Then do it in the middle of pleasure. We've proven more than once that my pain-pleasure sensors get a little confused when I'm excited enough.
That made him smile. As do mine. That made me smile. Let's fool around.
And then, he asked, voice low, when it's time, take blood, and then let's fuck.
He gave a surprised burst of laughter.
Ma petite, you're such a sweet talker. How can I refuse?
I leaned into him, pressed a gentle kiss upon his lips, and said,
Her lips suck forth my soul. See where it flies? Come, Helen, come, give me my soul again. Here will I dwell, for heaven is in these lips, and all is dross that is not Helena.
He gazed into my face with such longing.
I thought you said you could not remember more of the play.
I remembered more, I whispered.
Do you?
He shook his head, and we were so close that his hair brushed against mine so that you couldn't tell where one blackness left and the other began.
Not with you this close to me, no.
Good, I smiled. But promise some night that we'll get the whole play and take turns reading it to each other. He smiled, and it was the smile I'd come to value more than any other. It was real and vulnerable, and I think one of the few things left of the man he might have been if Belle Morte had not found him.
I swear it, and gladly.
Then help me peel off these wet jeans and leave the poetry for another night. He cupped my face in his hands.
It is always poetry between us, ma petite.
My mouth was suddenly dry, and it was hard to swallow past my pulse. My voice came breathy.
Yeah, but sometimes it's dirty limericks.
He laughed as he kissed me, and then he helped me out of the wet jeans and the wet socks and the wet shoes and the wet everything. When my cross spilled out of my shirt, it didn't glow. It just lay there glinting in the overhead lights. Jean-Claude averted his eyes, as he always did when he saw a holy object. But that was the only hint I had that a cross bothered him. I realized with a start that I'd never worn a cross around Jean-Claude and had it glow at him. What did that mean? I'm usually pretty straightforward, except in emotional areas, but I was trying to be different, change that. So I asked, Does it really hurt you to look at my cross? He looked determiningly at the edge of the bathtub.
No.
Then why look away?
Because it will start to glow, and I do not want that.
How do you know it will start to glow?
Because I am a vampire, and you are a true believer.
He was still staring at the water, the marble of the tub, anywhere and everywhere except at my chest with the cross still hanging around it. I've never had a cross glow when you were the only vampire around. He glanced up at that, then quickly down. That cannot be true. I thought about it some more. I can't ever remember it happening. You look away, then I take the cross off, and we go on about our business. But it doesn't glow. He shifted in the water enough to send little splashes against my legs.
Does it matter?
His voice held just how unhappy he was with the line of conversation. I don't know, I said. If you do not wish to feed, then I will go.
It is not that, Jean-Claude, honest.
He put a hand on the edge of the tub and stepped out.
Jean-Claude,
I said. No, ma petite, you do not want this, or you would not cling to your holy object. He took a vibrant blue towel that matched the sheets on the bed and began to dry off.
My point is... Oh, hell, I don't know what my point is. Just don't go.
I put my hands back to unfasten the clasp of the chain, and the door opened. Asher stepped inside, coated in dried blood, all of it mine. That should have bothered me, but it didn't. His hair still fell around his shoulders like spun gold, and with Asher, it wasn't a euphemism for blonde. His hair was like gold, spun to thick, soft waves. His eyes a blue so pale it was like winter skies, but warmer, more alive. He walked towards us, his long body nude and perfect. The scars didn't make him less perfect. They were simply a part of Asher, and nothing marred the guard-like grace as he moved into the room. He was so beautiful it stopped my breath in my throat, made my chest ache to see him. I wanted to say, come to us. But my voice was gone in the sheer wonder as he glided towards us on narrow bare feet. The cross flared to life, not the white-hot glow it had in the jeep, but bright enough to leave me blinking, bright enough to help me think. Asher was still beautiful, nothing could change that, but now I could breathe, move, talk. Though I had no idea what to say, I'd never had a cross glow around him either, until now. It was Jean-Claude who said it.
What have you done, mon ami? What have you done?
He had his back to the glow of the cross and was using a towel to help shield his eyes. Asher had thrown up an arm to protect his own pale blue gaze.
I tried to roll her mind, just enough for pleasure, but the ardor was too much.
What have you done? Jean-Claude asked again. I watched them both in the light of the cross, one hiding behind the blue towel, the other his own arm, and I answered for him. He rolled me. He rolled my mind, completely and utterly. Even as I said it, I knew he'd done more than that. I'd been rolled before. I'd even been rolled once upon a time by Jean-Claude when we first met. But vampire powers to cloud the mind are a dime a dozen. Most of them can do that. Most of the young ones have to capture you with a gaze. But the old ones can simply think at you. I was immune to most of it, partly natural ability as a necromancer, and part Jean-Claude's marks. But I wasn't immune to Asher. The cross kept glowing, the vampires kept shielding their eyes, and even with them hiding away from the white light, I still wanted them, both of them. But now I had to wonder how much of it was me, and how much of it was Asher's mind tricks. Damn it. Chapter 32. We ended up in the bedroom, but not for anything fun. I'd dried off and thrown on extra clothes that I kept at the circus. I had to put the wet shoes back on, though. My cross was safely underneath my shirt again. Once it went under the shirt, it stopped glowing, but there's still a pulsing warmth to it. Jean-Claude had knotted the blue towel around his waist, where it draped nearly to his ankles. He'd put a smaller towel on his hair, and the blue of the cloth brought out the blue of his eyes. Seeing his face free of all hair made him look more like a boy to me. It was the bones of his cheeks that saved his face from being utterly feminine. He was still beautiful, but an inch closer to handsome without that black veil of hair. Asher was still clothed in nothing but dried blood and the spill of all his own hair. He was pacing the room like some kind of caged beast. Jean-Claude had simply sat down on the edge of the bed, with the blue sheet still stained with blood and other fluids. He looked discouraged. I stood as far from them as I could, arms clasped around my stomach. I'd left my shoulder holster off, so that I wouldn't stroke my gun while I argued. I was hoping to tone the hostility down, not ramp it up. Jean-Claude laid his face in his hands, all pale skin and blue cloth, towels and sheets surrounding him.
Why did you do it, mon ami? If you had only behaved yourself, we would even now be together as we are meant to be.
I wasn't sure I liked how sure Jean-Claude was of me, but I couldn't really argue without lying, so I let it go. Shutting the fuck up is seldom a bad move on my part. Asher stopped pacing and said, "Anita has felt me feed. She knew that I could roll her mind completely. She did not say no to it. She said for me to take her, to feed from her, so I did. I did what she told me to do. And she was aware of how I would do it, because she has fed me once before." Jean-Claude raised his face from his hands like a drowning man coming up for air. "I know that Anita fed you when you lay dying in Tennessee." "She saved me," Asher said. He'd come to the end of the big four-poster bed. I watched the two of them framed against the blue sheets, where so recently we'd had a very good time. I stood there wanting them both, and my arms clung to me, as if by holding on tight I could keep it from happening.
"Oui, she saved you, but you did not roll her mind completely then, because I would have felt your touch upon her mind and heart, and it was not there. I tried to roll her mind, because it seems to me that every vampire that takes blood from her is in some way under her sway, her power. It is almost as if when a vampire feeds from her, it is she who controls them, not the other way around."
I stayed where I was, but this I couldn't let go. "Trust me, Asher, it doesn't work that way. I've had vamps bite me and have me under their sway before." He looked at me with those pale, pale eyes.
"But how long ago was that? I think that your powers have grown since then."
My gaze kept sliding down his body, tracing the blood pattern on that pale, slightly golden-tinged skin. I closed my eyes to say the next because I needed to stop watching them.
"Do you feel like you have to do what I say?"
He hesitated, and I fought the urge to look at him, to watch him think.
"No."
His voice was soft. I took a deep breath, let it out slowly, opened my eyes, and fought like hell to stare at Asher's face and nothing else.
"See, you are not in my power or anything."
He did a small frown.
"Are you in my power, then?"
"I cannot stop watching the two of you. I cannot stop thinking about what we did, what we could still do." He gave a harsh laugh, and it hurt to hear it, as if he'd struck a blow along my skin.
"How can you not think about us while we stand here in front of you like this?"
"Oh, you're not arrogant," I said, arms clinging to myself like it was the last safe place for them to be.
"Anita, I am thinking of you too. The pale spill of your back, the curve of your hip, the mound of your ass underneath me, the feel of me rubbing along the soft warmth of your skin."
"Stop," I said, and I had to turn away because I was blushing and it was suddenly hard to breathe.
"Why stop? It's what we're all thinking."
"Ma petite does not like to be reminded of pleasure."
"Mon Dieu, why not?"
I looked in time to see Jean-Claude give that all-purpose Gallic shrug, which meant everything and nothing. Usually, he made it look graceful. Today, it looked tired.
"Anita,"
Asher said. I looked at him, and this time I could make eye contact, except that staring into those amazing eyes wasn't much safer than looking at his amazing body.
"You told me that you wanted me inside you, as I remember. And when I bared your neck, you said, 'Yes, Asher, yes.'"
"I remember what I said."
"Then how can you be angry at me for doing what you asked?"
He took three strides closer to me, and I backed up. The movement stopped him.
"How can you blame me for this?"
"I don't know, but I do. How's that? Unfair? Or maybe not unfair. I don't know. But I do." Jean-Claude spoke then, his voice like the sigh of the wind outside the lonely door.
"If you had but restrained yourself, mon ami, we might even now be together in the bath."
"I don't know about that," I said. My voice sounded angry, and I was glad. Jean-Claude gazed at me with those blue-black eyes.
"Are you saying that you could refuse such a bounty, once having tasted it?"
I didn't blush this time. I paled. "Well, it's moot now, isn't it? Because he cheated." I pointed at Asher for dramatic emphasis. He stared at me open-mouthed.
"How did I cheat?"
Jean-Claude was back to holding his head in his hands.
"Ma petite does not allow vampire trickery to be played upon her."
His voice came muffled, but strangely clear. Asher looked from one of the other of us.
"Ever?"
Jean-Claude answered without moving, head still in his hands.
"For the most, we..."
Then she has never tasted you as you are meant to be tasted, Asher said, and his voice held a soft astonishment.
That is her choice, Jean-Claude said,
and he raised his face up slowly, so I could meet that blue gaze, and there was something of anger in his eyes. I didn't understand all of this conversation and wasn't sure I wanted to, so I ignored it. I've always been damn good at ignoring what makes me uncomfortable. The point is that Asher used vampire wiles on me. He's done something to cloud the way I think about him. Now I won't know, won't ever know, if what I'm feeling is real or a trick. There, I felt sure of moral high ground on this one, at least. Jean-Claude did sort of a voila gesture with his hands, as if to say, see, I told you. Asher's face began to lose its anger and work towards that blankness they both did so well.
So it was just a lie.
I looked at both of them. What was a lie?
That you wanted me to be with you and Jean-Claude.
I frowned. No, it wasn't a lie. I meant it.
Then this faux pas changes nothing, he said.
You've messed with my mind. I don't think that's just a faux pas. I think that's damn serious. My hands were on my hips, better than clinging to myself to keep from touching anybody. I embraced my anger because it made them less beautiful. Of course, it made everything less beautiful.
So you did lie, Asher said, his face almost empty of any expression.
I hated watching him shut himself off like this, but I didn't know what to do to stop it. Damn it, no, I didn't lie. You're the one who changed the rules, Asher, not me.
I changed nothing. You said we would be together. You offered me your bed. You begged me to be inside you. Jean-Claude said that your sweet ass was not to be touched, and the deep pleasure of your body was full. Where was I supposed to go?
I fought not to blush and failed. It was the ardor talking, and you knew it. He backed up until he came to the edge of the bed, and he half-collapsed on the blue sheets, grabbing the post to keep from sliding off the silk. His face was blank. But the rest of him acted as if I'd struck him, and I knew I'd said the wrong thing.
I said that once the ardor was cooled, you would find a way to reject me, to reject this.
And he gestured at Jean-Claude at the far end of the bed, and the bed itself.
And you have done just as I said you would do.
He pushed himself up from the bed, clinging to the wooden post for a moment, as if he wasn't sure his legs would hold him. He took a tentative step away from the bed, almost staggered, then another, and another. Each step was steadier than the last. He was going for the door.
Wait a minute! You're not going to just walk out, I said.
He stopped walking, but didn't turn around as he answered, giving a clear view of the perfection of the back of his body.
I cannot leave until Musette is gone. I will give her no excuse to take me back to the courts with her. If I belong to no one, she will do it, and I will have no grounds to refuse.
He rubbed his hands over his arms, as if he were cold.
When Musette is gone, I will petition for another master of the city. There are those who would take me in.
I walked towards him.
No.
No, you have to give me some time to think about what you did. It's not fair to walk off like this. I was almost to him when he whirled around, and the rage on his face stopped me like I'd hit a wall.
Fair? What is fair in being offered everything you ever wanted and thought to never have again, only to have it torn from your grasp? Torn from your grasp because you did exactly what you were told you could do, what was asked of you.
He didn't yell, but his anger filled his voice so that every word was like a red-hot poker flung at my face. I didn't know what to say in the face of that anger.
I will not, cannot stay and watch you and Jean-Claude. I would rather be without the sight of either of you than so very close, but cast from your bed, your arms, your affections.
He covered his face with his hands and gave a low scream.
To be with us as our lover is to be seduced by our powers.
He tore his hands away from his face and let me see his eyes drowning blue, his anger making up for the lack of blood.
I have never dreamt that Jean-Claude had not done so.
He looked at the other man, still sitting on the edge of the bed.
How could you be with her for so long and resist the temptation?
She is most adamantly against such things, Jean-Claude said. At least you have had her willing blood. I have never been so blessed.
Asher frowned, and it sat badly on that lovely face, like an angel frowning.
That astounds me still, though I knew that. But she has never bestowed her charms upon you,
and now I will never know them.
This was all happening way too fast for me. Jean-Claude understands the rules, and we both live by them. Of course, I'd been just about ready to change the rules, but I didn't think Asher needed to know right now. Asher shook his head, sending that foam of gold